I started drinking when I was 13, and everything changed when I was 13. I mean, I did everything. I did most of my drinking from 13 to about 21. And my drinking was unusual, okay, because it wasn't like my friends. And we were like the party people of the school, you know. I couldn't fit in with the popular people. I couldn't fit in with the jocks or whatever. So it was the partiers that I felt like I connect with. And that's, you know, that's was my life, was just going to school, you know, hanging out with these people that I thought were my friends, and getting completely wasted, you know. And that's, you know, I got a fake ID when I was 17 years old, and back then the IDs weren't like what they are today. So it was really easy to use some other blonde, blue eye, whatever. You know, I just used her ID, and it was very easy to get in and into the bars, you know. And when I was there, the one thing that I did notice when I was about, I think 17, is when the waitress would come and ask me what I wanted to drink, I would order it, and then she would come, and then I would tell her I wanted two of what I want, you know, to drink, because I didn't want to wait by the time she got back. I don't know if that makes any sense. I just didn't want to wait for the second one. You know what I mean? So I had to have two at a time. And no one else in my circle did that, you know. And I was always the one that would wake up in some foreign place, you know. And I remember the time when I went to Jamaica with some girlfriends at 17, 18 years old. And I remember waking up, I was in my dress, and I didn't have my underwear on, you know. And so I'm like, okay. So I wanted to check everything to make sure everything was there. And luckily it was, you know. But I wanted to, you know, I did not know how I ended up there. And that is an extremely frightening experience, you know. I mean, that is not pleasant when you wake up and you don't know how you got to this room that didn't even belong to you. And I'm sure all of you, or maybe some of you, can relate to that. As for a woman, you know, it's quite humbling and embarrassing to think that maybe someone fondled you while you were passed out. And at least I wasn't there to enjoy the experience. I was pretty much gone. So anyway, so again, you know, those kinds of things occurred quite frequently, you know. And, you know, so I got to say something. Some of you have some very serious faces, like looking at me like this. It's like, you know what, just relax a little bit. Let's just smile and have a good time, right? I mean, what the fuck? So just, God, it's like, I don't know what if she has anything good to say, you know. I mean, maybe she's, you know, who the fuck is this blonde girl up here, you know. And so that's just a side note, okay? So anyway, so, you know, we're all just a bunch of alcoholics, or at least those that claim they are, you know. I mean, this is a process. You have to find out if you are. You know, the book lays out tests that you take to find out if you're an alcoholic. Don't let anyone tell you you're an alcoholic or an addict. I had to find out for myself, and I had to know that not only was I powerless over alcohol, that my life was unmanageable, but the first step, you know, no one ever explained the first step to me. And I didn't know, I knew that I had this physical craving. I knew that I had a mental obsession once I had the substance inside of my body. And then the spiritual malady, I never knew anything. I didn't know anything about this. Do you know anything about the spiritual malady? I mean, how often do you hear the bedevilments talked about in meetings? I never heard, you know, that I was maybe prey to misery and depression, that I was useless. What were the other ones? That I, full of fear. Okay, that's a gnarly one. Can't make a living. Personal relationships. Yeah, those are clearly not happening. But, you know, you know, when I first came in, I had a sponsor, and I get amazed at sometimes these newcomers that come up, like Bobby, you know, that speaks so with, you know, she's articulate. Like, I couldn't even put one sentence together. And I remember my sponsor saying, "Are you sure? You know, I mean, did anything happen to you?" And I just, you know, I have a brother that's autistic, you know, and I thought, oh shit, you know, maybe I have untreated autism. Oh God. So I'm serious. That's what I thought. And it was a very frightening experience, because I didn't even know, I didn't even know how to communicate because I'm serious. From the, I used to walk to high school. Remember those margin, little margin containers? That's what I would use to fill the hard alcohol with to just to walk into high school. Like, who does that in ninth grade? You know, I just, that wasn't normal, but I thought that that was the way that everyone coped, you know. And my daughter now, who's going to be 14 this month, I look at her and I just go, oh my God. I mean, she's so nothing like me, and thank God for that. You know, I mean, she would never, you know, she didn't go through what I went through with my dad being married three times and having two kids with two, you know, all three wives. And, you know, she has a sense of stability today that I never had. And I'm not, you know, blaming my upbringing, but it did have an impact on my alcoholism. And so let me just take a little water here because my mouth gets a little dry. Okay, I got to wipe my mouth too so I don't have that little white in the corner of my mouth there. But just kidding. Do you ever do that? Like, you got to make sure you don't have anything on your... Okay. Okay, so where was I? So I was talking about... Okay, so I know going through the steps. I know that I'm an alcoholic. I had to know that for myself. No one brought me here. I didn't come here for any reason other than I was in a serious emotional... I was broken. Completely broken. Not only could I not finish a sentence, okay, but I didn't know how to communicate thoughts, feelings. I didn't know anything about a higher power. My parents were, my mom is an atheist. She still is today. My father was agnostic. And when I came and learned about the steps, I was absolutely relieved that there was an opportunity to maybe have a relationship with a God that I had not even known could even be a reality. And going through the first step and then came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me sanity. I didn't know anything about what insanity meant. I knew that I knew that my life was insane and that I couldn't, that nothing was coming together. I knew that, I'm trying to track with the steps, and maybe that's why I'm getting a little lost because I don't want to necessarily track with anything. Let me just speed ahead, okay? So I really want to talk about my husband and how he's been a healing agent in my life, okay? When I first met him, I was 23 years old. I was a couple years sober then, and I met him at church, and you know, I don't know. Alcoholics, it's one extreme to the other. You know, here I was, didn't know God, drinking all the time, using, smoking cigarettes, you know, doing whatever I could get my hands on to not be in my own skin because it was so uncomfortable. I mean, why do we drink? Why did I drink? Because I couldn't, because of the ease and sense of calmness I received when I put something in my body. I could have a conversation with you. I could talk to you. I could be in an intimate situation. I can do whatever I needed to do because I had something in my body, that ease and comfort. And when I first met my husband, we were both sober. He was 36. I was 23. And we're still married today, thankfully, 19 years later. But, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say with him, but he, I wish he was here tonight so I could look at him and get a little comfort from him. I like how you're texting over there. Who are you talking to? Right on. So, there's a lot of things about relationships, you know. You know, it's really hard, you know, coming up here, I don't know anybody in here, you know, it's just, it's bizarre, you know, and when people speak, now, I'm not going to give you a lecture, okay, but I mean, it's hard because I'm trying to be authentic with you and tell you okay, never mind, I'm going on a track that I really don't want to go on, but the point being is that, you know that this is really late for me. I'm usually in bed by 8:30 every single night. I have been up since 4:15 this morning. I get up at 4 every morning. Oh my God, this is like really late. 8:30. Okay, so and that's another thing. You know, being sober, like I'm like a geriatric now. I mean, I'm not only is my husband now 55, that looks a little bit older than 55, unfortunately, but he did not hear that. No, he's a beautiful man. I've been trying to tell him to get his hair colored and he won't do it, so No, I would never get rid of him. You know, it was funny because, and I'll come back to the steps, but we have some rental property, and I have to tell you how God can change. I, to change hardcore self-centeredness, okay, I'm self-centered. That is my problem, right? Self-centered to the extreme. Like, we have rental property. Today was the first day that I actually took interest in that rental property and went and helped him and got on my knees and weeded out the weeds in front of our property. Like, before, that was rental property that I got to enjoy some of the financial benefits of it, but I didn't want to have anything to do with it. You know, so he took care of that, and I, like, it didn't even occur to me that maybe I should help him. When I start looking at how disgust, I mean, how gross that is, okay? I mean, but I want it to pay for my graduate school, but I don't want to have anything to do with the rental property. I mean, how fucked up is that? You know, but see, these are the things that God does that changes, you know? See, I can't fix myself, and I tried, okay? Because I went to graduate school, and I got my degree in psychology, and I was going to be a therapist, and what a mess that was. That was not a good experience. Because not only was I high during the time you would talk to me as your therapist, and that's another thing about therapy, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing, but, you know, this... Feelings are so overrated. I mean, feelings. Oh, my God. I mean, feelings are just what they are. They are a state that comes and goes and comes and goes. And if I make my decision on my feel, if I make decisions with my feelings, my life is totally jacked fucked. I don't know about yours, but I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, I didn't feel like coming here tonight. I mean, I want to be in bed, you know, but instead I'm here. So I have to follow through with what I say I'm going to do. I'm still curious who he's texting, but maybe he's still having a conversation with his daughter that's lasting a little bit, maybe long. No, I'm only kidding. But, you know, the whole thing on feelings, it's just, I used to worship feelings. And today I don't worship those. I worship a creator that has created you and who's created me and has a purpose for my life, just as he has a purpose for your life, even if you don't think it or believe it or feel it. You know, sometimes I don't always feel my higher power, but I know for a fact through my experiences that he's there and that he loves me. And before I would need validation, like what Bobby was saying, from the external world in order to feel loved. Today, I can just be who I am, and whether you like me or not really doesn't matter to me. I'm being honest. I mean, I'll never probably see any of you again. I mean, maybe I will, but I think you're all great, especially the guy with the glasses on the head that's been frowning at me the whole time. But I've been enjoying the guy back there with the hat that's been smiling. Thank you. So, you know, it's all okay, you know, because my message, your message, you know, whatever, it's just a message, you know, let me go back to Neil. So, oh my God. So I haven't had a drink since 2001. And I, when my daughter was born, she was a year and a half and I went into treatment and I went to Pacific Hills in San Juan Capistrano. And I was there with 52 women for miserable, not 52 women, excuse me, all women for 52 miserable days. Women. I know men like women, but this woman, oh my God. Talk about feelings. But anyway, so that was a good experience, you know. But, you know, I, being in that situation, I think my daughter was just a year, she was only a year. And, oh my God, how things have changed since that time. You know, now she's going to be 14 this month. You know, when I met my husband, I wanted to do everything opposite, where I was promiscuous when I was a teenager with him. It was no sex. You know, when he talked to me, he said, I said, if you're looking for sex, you're looking in the wrong place because I'm waiting until I get married. I took that self-righteous stance, you know. So we did. We waited until we got married. And I will tell you, it was the best thing ever because I used to think you'd have to have sex first to experience to make sure that he's the right fit and I'm the right fit for him. But that's not the case at all. Where I said, we got to be friends first. You know, I'm laying all down the line. You know, this is the way it's going to be. And I'm not a control freak at all. You know, and I just said, this is just the way it is. And anyway, that's the extreme I'm trying to, you know, bring into play here. But, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, being completely open and honest and vulnerable, it is one of the hardest things ever because there's such a risk of being rejected and there's such a risk of being known. You know, it's like, oh, you know, you probably are not going to like me once you really get to know me. Excuse me. That's what I would used to think. You know, with him, this man that I believe God put in my life helped heal those areas that I never had as growing up as a child, you know, and where am I going with him? You know, the spiritual malady in the first step, that is what landed me in jail in 2010. And I was sober and I was in jail because I did not think that my explosive anger was an issue, although I did later. But I, you know, listening to the message in meetings wasn't the message that I'm learning now listening to the message in some meetings wasn't the message that I've been learning that's in the book. And I, you know, would hear certain things like service or sponsor somebody. I asked someone to be my sponsor and they said, you know, that just doesn't work for me. You know, that's not my gift. And I know now it doesn't matter if it's your fucking gift. I just have to do that no matter what because I have a thing called self-centeredness and a spiritual malady that needs to be treated by acts of service and by working with somebody, not just putting coffee on the counter, although, you know, what these guys do is important. But addressing that self-centeredness is huge. And where was I going with that? Why, you know, this is just crazy. It's like, where is my head right? 2010. Yes. I went to jail because in the middle of the night we got in an argument and I poured water all over him and he got really flipped out, pissed off and I did some other things and the cops. No, I didn't hit him. I couldn't hit him. He'd kicked my ass all over. Oh, yeah. But anyway, so I went to jail, okay? And I'm in jail for the first time in my life. And I'm sober, and I'm in there with other women who had been using or that were drunk. And what I'm trying to say is that my, you know, I had 8 years away from a drink, and I was miserable. My life was out of control. I was depressed. I was, my self-centeredness was growing like this raging weed. It wasn't being addressed. I'd go to meetings. I would do all these things and nothing was taking care of the problem. So not only was I fucked up when I first entered the rooms, I was more screwed up 8 years into this process of recovery. So there's a problem. So luckily I went through the book again and I was looking at this big book like a textbook. You know, I started reading it and turning the statements into questions, and I started asking myself and putting Georgie instead of we because I have this ego that separates, you know, that when I'm reading the big book and it says us and we and blah, 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 I'm not connecting with it because it's not saying Georgie, if that makes any sense. Or, you know, so I started doing this, and I started really relate, looking at Bill's stories. I read through Bill's story and put Georgie's story above Bill's story and then wrote all my situations in which I related to Bill. You know, so I really started to have this experience with the book and understanding that I am not any different, that I'm just like he was in a lot of different ways. And, you know, so that started to create an experience in me where, and I can always tell my temperature of how I'm doing in terms of spiritually, because it's anger. Anger is a huge, huge emotion. And underlying it is usually hurt or whatever it is. But when I'm angry and I'm flying off the handle over stupid stuff, I know I'm so far away from love and tolerance is my code. I mean, I'm so far from that. And that is my gauge along with my little pug, you know, my little pug Daisy. You know, I can tell because she's so sensitive. You know, if she notices anything, she will actually leave and go hide somewhere, and then I know I'm really in trouble, you know, and then I'm really off the rocker. But anyway, back to what I was saying with the spiritual malady and with the going through the steps and turning the statements into questions and really identifying with the book in a way that I had never had identified before, going through the inventory and looking through the third column and how I was running my life, how I, you know, God took my alcoholism, but I was still trying to run my career and run my daughter and run my marriage, and I wasn't connecting with how life run on self will could hardly be a success, and I was still doing all those things, and I didn't know that with the third step, you know, that the prayers for me was a confirmation of my decision to turn my life over to the will of God, that I had to look at where I was running the show, how I was the actor, and how I wasn't willing to be whatever God wanted me to be. You know, whatever, not only was I not willing to do that, I wasn't willing to sit still for 5 minutes in prayer and meditation to get any kind of guidance or direction in my life. I got to take some more water. So, oh, is this something? That's cute. I know you were joking, though. No. So the playing the role that God assigns, you know, going through that, looking at the third column, that was pretty huge. Things started to change in my life. I started to think, I was convinced that my husband was the result and my main problem. You were my problem. Have you ever listened to someone blame other people about their problems and how disgustingly annoying it is? I mean, seriously, I mean, when I'm blaming someone for my problems are because I created them to be what they are. They're of my own making. It's what the book says. It says our problems of our own making. So when I realized that I was the problem, I was so ecstatic, okay? And when I realized that I was truly an alcoholic with a spiritual malady that only a spiritual solution could conquer, then I knew that I would be willing to go through the steps. If I don't know I'm an alcoholic, why am I going to admit to somebody my worst, most miserable failings? Why am I going to go through these amends and do 10, 11, and, you know, and meet with a newcomer? Why would I do that if I didn't know what the problem was? And that's, you know, that's what Bill Wilson did, right? He knew what the problem was. He took it, you know, he was in Ohio. Dr. Bob had the spiritual solution. Bill had the problem, knowledge of the problem. They came together and they created the 12 steps. But if I don't know what the fucking problem is, I'm not going to seek a solution. So the problem for me was the spiritual malady. It was the first step. Like when people talked about the first step, I'd get annoyed. Okay, so what? I'm powerless. I get that. No, you don't, Georgie. Sit back down. You know what I mean? You know, there's a lot you don't get. You know, I will tell you, the people that got real honest with me and said, you know what, you entitled person, you, when I went to treatment, I didn't think the rules applied to me. I'm serious, where it says the times that you can make calls, like that didn't even register they were talking about me too. Like, no, that's for them. No, but I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, where was I going again? See, you got to help me track because I have such bad ADD. Does anybody else have ADD in here? It's a horrible, fucking horrible thing. Oh, okay, yes. So the first step, yes, that's the most important for me. That was the awareness. And so what about the first step? Okay, you've already said that. Okay. Oh, God. Okay, is it time for me to shut up now? Okay, let me go back to my husband. Oh, my God. So I realized I was the problem. So, you know, things started to change in my family. You know, there was a peace. There was a calmness. He did not become the problem anymore. And I was able to be, I ministered to him in ways I never had before, you know, with him. And that is the beautiful spiritual awakening that I've experienced with these steps. And again, it goes back to the relationships. It's relationships. It's what I bring to the table. It's not what I can get from you. It's what I bring to you. I seek now to see how I can be helpful. I don't seek what you can do for me anymore. And there's a joy in my life today that it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not trying to get something from you. Yeah, there's times that, you know, my selfishness kicks in, but I know where I can take that. And I can take it. I can write inventory on it. I can get quiet with my higher power and ask him to remove the self-centeredness, as the book says. Pray and ask God to remove the selfishness and the dishonesty and the self, you know, all those things that try to keep me down. You know, the self-centeredness, you know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. You know, I mean, it's a disease. I mean, it's a disease of self. And nothing's more miserable than thinking about myself. I mean, really, I mean, it's never, 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 never good enough. I mean, there's always something I can find that's wrong or could be better, or, you know. And now I just, you know, like going to the rental property today, you know, I mean, I'm trying to speak in the here and now. It was odd just to see my husband's smile on his face. Like, I am indebted to this man. He has put up with so much of my manipulation and the things that I did to him and the ways that I tried to get something out of him. So I bring in that example, Tyler. No, I'm just kidding. Like, okay, I'm going to tell you about our sexual relationship, okay? And when I was in a meeting one time, and I shared this openly, I was in a meeting and I didn't think that it, I thought that this was a while ago, about 4 years ago, and I thought it was okay to charge my husband for a blowjob. Yeah, I'm serious. And I shared about that openly in a meeting because I don't care, okay? So I'm trying to be authentic. And it didn't occur to me that maybe that was wrong. Look at the guy in the back. He's his big mouth open. So I called my sponsor and I said, "Do you think it's a problem that I charged my husband $100 for a blowjob?" And she says, "Georgie, I don't think you charged enough." No, that's pretty bad. Seriously, like, it is a woman's, like, when I get married, no, really, when I get married, there's certain things that I need to do, just like there's certain things he needs to do. And when we come together, him to meet the emotional needs, not all of them, some of them. And I'm to be there for him, to be his wife, to nurture him in a sexual way. And nobody wants to talk about sex, right? Oh my God, you talk about sex. I like to talk about sex. I want to talk about the very things that make you uncomfortable. Okay, because those are the things that make me uncomfortable. Because those are the things that we try to stuff away, not talk about. Let's just talk about all the fluffy bullshit and not talk about the real things. It does say that we have sexual we have sexual problems. I mean, does anybody here want to talk about it? I mean, you can just come on up. So, I know. So, no, I'm serious. I mean, so I'm going to talk about it, damn it, because it is real. It is real life stuff that happens. We'll see you later. Bye. Bye. I think they're a little uncomfortable. No, I'm only kidding. Maybe they had to leave for some other reason. That's another thing, taking everything personal. Oh, my gosh. Everything. So, how much time do I have? So, anyway, back to the... So, now, in relation to my husband, I don't charge him for anything. No, seriously. Oh my God, it's so good now. Oh my gosh, no. I'm working for it in other ways. Oh my gosh. So, what do you do with fear? You know, my fear. What do I do to get through each day? And that's prayer and meditation. The book says the main object is to help you to have a relationship with your Creator. That's the main object of the big book, is to help you to develop a relationship or to lead you to a relationship with a Creator. Because that's the only thing that's going to keep me sober. My husband and my sponsor and the meetings, they will never keep me sober. If I don't have a direct conscious contact with my Creator, I won't survive. And, you know, the book says, you know, I have two alternatives, either to die an alcoholic death or to have a relationship with my Creator. There's either God is everything or He is nothing. And that doesn't mean God just has, you know, control over my alcoholism. He has some control over every aspect of my life. And is that happening today? No, but that's something I'm working towards on a daily basis. And I get quiet with God for 20 minutes, you know, and just listen. You know, when I did some of the research into the old AA roots where the recovery rate was much higher than it is today, they talked about the Bible. Dr. Bob has a Bible still in his original reading. There is his Bible that he opened with. But nobody wants to talk about the Bible, right? No, I mean, to talk about those things can make us uncomfortable. And, okay, so I lost my train of thought again. I know, Tyler. No, I was thinking about, no, I just, I'm, yes, the Bible. So I have, I don't know, how many of you actually get quiet and sit and think, or just get quiet? Good. You know, it's kind of a scary thing, because I have to listen, and that's what I believe prayer is today. It's listening. It's much more about listening than it is talking. In fact, I don't really like to talk a lot. I'd much rather be a listener than a talker. So when I'm quiet, I have to hear certain things that maybe I don't want to hear. And that was the other day when I got quiet for 20 minutes about going to the rental property. I'll bring back the rental property. I just felt that I needed to do that. You know, that didn't come from me. I didn't think, oh, I need to add to my husband's life by doing certain things. I felt directly guided to do that. You know, and that didn't, nothing, that's, I am self-centered to the core. So for me to act contrary to that is not of my doing. That is from something else. That's from a God that is changing me on the inside. That's creating that person that I believe that God wants me to be, because I can't stay selfish and still keep coming to these rooms and keep doing what I'm doing. I was told that I had to be rid of the self-centeredness and that I can't fix me. A sick mind, I used to hear, can't heal a sick mind. I need something pure, something that's unselfish in order to help with my own. And, you know, the living this kind of life is totally different, but it's so, the creativity. And the you know, I teach fitness for a living. I work with clients. I teach classes. And sometimes I don't even know what I'm going to do that day, but I get quiet and I ask God, His Spirit, to direct the class. And the creativity that comes and the spontaneity is, I wouldn't trade that for the world. I don't choreograph. I don't have a script. All I'm doing is just doing what I feel that God wants me to do, and His Spirit comes through. And that's all I ever want to be, is just a vessel for God to work through to touch your life. It's not about me. My life is not about Georgie, and I don't want it to be about Georgie, because it was for so many years, and it just led to, it just doesn't work. What I have found, it seems like a universal law. You know, you can't go through life being self-centered and think you're going to have successful relationships or be good at your job. I mean, the spiritual solution is the only solution for this alcoholic. I don't know about you, but I mean, if one of the things that I have to be sure is my attitude. It says that I have to have a right attitude. What does that mean? What did the book mean when it said that? It says I can't be prejudiced. If I have, you know, bad experiences in the past, well, get the fuck over it, Georgie. I mean, get over it, okay? I mean, my opinions don't really work very well. My old ideas don't work. And so I have to be open, no matter how painful and how uncomfortable it is, to be open to new ideas, and I'm not used to. And that, because I, you know, I'm fear-based. Fear, that's what drives all the delusions, that's what drove all my decisions. And, you know, I'm going to wrap it up here, even though it's not totally quite my time. But all I can say is, one thing is clear is that every one of you is important. And I'm glad that you're here, that you came to listen to some wacky girl from Carlsbad. But, you know, if you're in a place where you know, like the newcomer, if you're in a place where you don't know if a God would work for you or whatever it is, I just know that my God is just, we have 24/7. He's available. Like my husband and my friends or my sponsor's not available all the time. In fact, they're not available a lot. And I can't, you are, I know, Tyla's my sponsor, but you know, but she's amazing. No, but seriously, people can't meet all my needs. And when I expect people to meet my needs, I'm miserable. So again, it's looking inwardly. It's being introspective. It's wanting something from you. And if I keep thinking about what I can give and add to the world, I'm a much happier person. And I don't want to go through one more day being miserable. I want to live a joyful life, the life that God intended. And, you know, and if that's being an idiot up here or whatever it is, I don't really care. That's the beauty of it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. What was that? Yes. Oh, you know, that was, and it's just really about being who I am and who you are, and that's enough out of me. I've said way, way, way too much. Thanks so much for having me be here today.